3rd, 1986.
A wonderful run by Albert Kidd.
This is Albert Kidd, the heartbreak season on Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
We are in the midst of an extraordinary season. We've had a team from out with the Old Firm leading the Premiership table. We've had umpteen managerial changes at Celtic and Rangers. We've even had Scotland get into the finals of the World Cup for the first time since 1998. But 40 years ago, this very day, I was at Love Street, Paisley, for another event that made history. A day that brought jubilation to Celtic and heartbreak to Hearts.
Back in the day, the Scottish top flight still awarded 2 points for a win, and Hearts were on unrivalled form. After a 1-0 defeat to Clydebank in September, the Tynecastle side had gone 27 league games unbeaten, taking 45 points from a possible 54. Meanwhile, defeats to Dundee United, Aberdeen and Rangers meant that Celtic had fallen to 5th place by December and looked all but out of the title race. 1986 started with an Old Firm win at Celtic Park, but this would be one of only 3 wins in their next 10 league games. The club bounced back, winning their next 6 fixtures as they headed into the final week. In their penultimate game against Motherwell, Celtic knew anything but a win would be enough to seal the title for Hearts. 2 goals from Brian McClair meant the Hoops left Fir Park with all the points and sealed the title showdown. It all came down to the final day, 3rd of May 1986. St Mirren versus Celtic and Dundee against Hearts. Celtic knew they would need to win by a comfortable margin to have any chance of lifting the Scottish Premier Division trophy. And they needed some help from Dundee. Even a goalless draw at Dens Park would crown Hearts champions, no matter the score at Love Street.
Behind me is a now residential area of Paisley, but on the 3rd of May 1986, I was here as part of the Clyde One Super Scoreboard team as Celtic travelled to take on St Mirren. It was a day that would go down as one of the most exciting ever in Scottish football.
This is Radio Clyde, the station that went to the game. Let's go back to Love Street and rejoin Richard Park there.
Well, it'll be unfolding here on Radio Clyde this afternoon. There'll be live action from one of the matches, up-to-the-minute reports on all the other games. So stay with us. Super Scoreboard 86, St Mirren against Celtic. Watching from the back of the stand in the press box there, Hugh Keevans.
Well, Richard, it's all abundantly clear for Celtic this afternoon. They have to rely on Hearts losing at Dens Park. They must also win by 3 clear goals. And I think they've been helped in this task by the news that Campbell Money will not be able to play this afternoon. And neither will Steve Clark, the man, in fact, who scored the goal at Parkhead the last time these sides met, when Celtic dropped one more valuable championship point. So Celtic have nothing else for it but to attack all out today. They don't even bother about defending Pat Bonner's goal. They must go and get 3 of their own.
Super Scoreboard, Richard, then as now, was an iconic programme with one iconic figure in Clyde's history, this man.
I think, of course, that Celtic are capable of winning today, but whether they're capable, as Hugh Keevan says, of getting 3 goals is a huge question. But what makes me very happy, the one thing I've got right this season, when I've got a lot wrong also, of course, is that we did say we thought that this season could go to the last Saturday. And I think this will be a Saturday afternoon to savour and to long remember. And I think it's going to end in triumph for Hearts.
I mean, the one thing about Jimmy Sanderson, he came off the bench and he gave you a view, didn't he? He was the prototype of everything and everybody that you hear today. They shalt not pass is the motto, occasionally argumentative, but highly knowledgeable. In James's case, a voice that became iconic in Scotland. I mean, I think of him with the greatest affection of any person. I can hear so many of the things he said. I can think back to certain programs. I think about the phrases. I think about the phone-ins after the show. He would say to our old friend Paul Cooney and myself when we were overseas, well, you've got to come round to my hotel because you boys have got to come down and take tea. You know? He had that wonderful accent. I mean, he loved his life. There are so many stories, Hugh.
in my first season having been employed by yourself. You, Jimmy, and I are in On Air One, and he had the cigar, and he threw the cigar into the waste paper bin at his feet, and of course it caught light. And I was trying to attract your attention. And eventually we got to the ad break and you took off your cans and more or less said, "What is it?" I said, "The studio is on fire."
That was Jimmy, you know, the greatest character of characters. He never missed a beat, never missed a game, never missed a show, never missed a phone-in. And I mean, quite honestly, we won't and we haven't seen his like again.
Let's go back to that day, May 3rd, 40 years ago.
All is set. This could just be a historic footballing afternoon here at Love Street. It could just be that Celtic will come from the back to clinch the championship. The Celtic supporters here in the ground this afternoon believe it is possible.
Your words, Richard, were prophetic. It was a historic afternoon.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was one of the greatest footballing afternoons of my time at Clyde. I think about it quite a lot, actually, because at that point, I think, you know, along with the 10,000 Celtic supporters who were in the ground, there wasn't really that much expectation. Surely Hearts wouldn't blow it now. They'd come such a long way. And yet, this was such a great Celtic team. And I use that word advisedly, because when you go through the names, you think, my God, half a dozen of these guys are legends. And I'm sure you'd agree with that, Hugh.
Yeah.
And you thought, there's got to be a chance. There was something in the air.
Watching from the bench that day was Celtic's Peter Grant.
Davey always made me part, even though I was one of the young ones. He always made me feel part because you were never isolated in any respect. And it was a thing that Celtic, I think even to this day, I'm sure the boys get told the same things. You know, you never spoke about a game 2 weeks' time. All you spoke about was the next one. You'd done one, you win it, you move on. Now it's about preparing for the next one.
It was a strange old season for Celtic, wasn't it? Because at one point you were third and then you were fifth, and it wasn't the best of starts to the season, Peter.
No, it wasn't, but if you remember, Hugh, it was an unbelievable group of players. You know, I'd broke into a team that was men who'd won things. So you knew these boys were more than capable of winning any game. The build-up getting into the last game was incredible. I've never been in a bus or a dressing room knowing that they would win a game comfortably. Near enough named the amount of goals they were going to win by. Because you've seen the quality you had. You had the Moa Johnsons, you had the Brian McClairs, who always had goals in them. Then you had Murdo for the middle of the pitch, you had Tommy. On that particular day, there was a great belief that we would win. But we didn't know what was going to happen with Hearts. People tend to forget. I think, even myself, I was led to believe it was 22 games, but it was actually 27 league matches that Hearts had went unbeaten. It was incredible.
Also starting on the bench that day for Hearts was Kenny Black.
Hearts had to make a substitution in the second half. Brian Whittaker went off. I did say he'd received a knock in the first half, and Kenny Black is now in the left back spot.
40 years ago, Kenny, you must have been 12 that day.
You're very nice for you to say that, Hugh. We had a great camaraderie at our club. Alex McDonald and Sarnes Yarden were very much a part of that. I remember when I joined Hearts, we had a very much Dad's Army type of thing, you know, with the Willie Johnsons and the Jimmy Bones and the Stuart McClans, Sandy, self, Roddy McDonald. But I was one of the young brigade at that time, joining the likes of Davey Bowman, Gary Mackay, John Robertson, John Cahoon. We had a great squad.
At the start of the season, could you ever have conceived of being even in the running for the title?
No, your expectations are probably to try and finish as high as possible, but to have the aspirations of finishing top were a little bit dream world as such. But it's amazing. 40 years, from a football point of view, no question it was the ending that we didn't want. It ended up going pear-shaped in the last 8 minutes of the game.
Captaining Dundee against Hearts was Super Scoreboard's own Jim Duffy.
It was quite a surreal day. There was 10,000 Hearts fans there. 99% probably come up to celebrate because they only needed a draw. The fact is that I think people forgot that we actually needed to win and hope that Rangers dropped points and then we'd have been in Europe. So we had a reason to try and win the game. But Hearts were on such a fantastic run of form. So I think everybody just thought it was a formality. And I even remember the PA saying, oh, would the Hearts fans refrain from coming onto the pitch to celebrate at the end of the game? I think it was during the game that they actually announced that. We had our targets and objectives to try and achieve. Anybody that knows Archie Knox, who was our manager at that time, knows how much a demand Archie put on his players.
Yeah.
I think even if we didn't have anything to play for, Archie would have demanded a performance from us. So we went out with the intention of trying to do the best we can, but the game was very nervous. There was no doubt about it. You could feel the tension in the air before the game.
And of course, waiting to come on was Dundee's Albert Kidd.
We definitely weren't involved in qualifying for Europe. Nothing about Hearts winning the league or anything like that. It was just the focus was the game with Motherwell and Rangers. It was quite a good thing just going on the park because there was a few Celtic supporters in the Dundee Football Club, especially me on the bench as well. We were sort of talking about that, and then we got word of the goals and all that type of stuff.
While myself, Richard and James were at Love Street, Jim Craig was watching at Dens Park.
I've played in seven of these particular games, Richard, but the atmosphere, I can only say, is absolutely electric, and it brings me back to me what it must have been like way back in the 1960s. Three quarters of this park is full of Hearts supporters, packed shoulder to shoulder, a fair representation of Dundee fans at the other end, and a really towsy start to this game. I think we're in for a real afternoon of both drama and excitement.
Jim, when you travelled to Dens Park that day, a Lisbon Lion, did you have any belief in Celtic winning the league?
Well, not really, because Hearts were challenging very well for the title and Celtic were in not the greatest of positions. And it's very difficult for me at that time because obviously my thoughts are with one team, but at the same time, I've got to do a job and try and be fair to both sides who were there.
Were you sorry that Richard Park positioned you at Dens Park and not at Love Street?
Well, I didn't wonder. I thought that was him getting his own back in something. You know, I was not too sure what I'd done to myself in the past. But I think it was fair, actually, to put me somewhere where my own feelings wouldn't be too obvious. So it's probably quite sensible in the long run.
I found over the years of working on the show, Jim Craig is an ace professional. Jim got the potential of that storyline and thought, well, if I'm not going to be at Celtic Park, then I will be doing the next best thing, seeing if he can will Dundee on to a result. This was not a neutral support.
I think there was a hope rather than an expectation. We could only go to Dundee and hope for the best, but it was really out of our hands by that time as well.
In 1986, I was working on the Posh paper in Edinburgh and we had a curling correspondent who painted his windowsills maroon. And I thought, this is getting out of hand now. Were you conscious of the city growing and growing and growing in expectation, or at least your half of the city?
Very much so. You know, I think the run that we had from September onwards started to gain a bit of momentum each week, each month going past, and still managing to keep that consistent level of performance and results. It was a bit scary at the same time.
When you got to Dens Park and all the Hearts fans are there, did you believe that fate was about to lend a hand and you would become the champions?
Well, I think when you get to the last game of the season, and it certainly was very much in our favour, but you never know in football, you know, and X amount of goals that Celtic had to win by. And the bottom line is, we just go and avoid defeat and we win the league. So that was very much our mindset, and going there not to just get behind the ball and try and play for a draw. That wasn't our way of playing that season. That final Saturday was exciting but nerve-wracking at the same time.
I'd been out for a few weeks with a torn calf and I'd come back for the Motherwell game. And I'd come back, obviously, and David selected us to be on. So I was chuffed anyway. So I was stripped in the match. And at that time, you'd only two substitutes. You just want things to go well. But I think a lot of prayers getting said, I think, that everything would go right up at Dundee. But the biggest thing was that we do our job right. And I think it was always a mantra at Celtic Football Club that, worry about what you do yourself.
Well, my question is, can you still do it, do you think?
I believe we can. I think Dundee will beat Hearts, and it's up to us. We're playing well, we're making chances, and Saturday, make sure we take them.
Well, there's a positive view from a manager. One of the most positive views I ever heard. Davey, he thinks indeed that Dundee can beat Hearts and that Celtic can carry it off today. So I most certainly admire what he has to say, but I must thoroughly disagree with it. But I do admire him for standing up and saying it. No pussyfooting there. I wish more managers would say exactly the same things.
Davey was always confident. People used to call him that, as you know yourself, the quiet assassin and all this. He never really said that much. The way Davey was, he gave the team confidence. We saying nothing. He trusted you to go out and do your job. and do your job well. We knew we'd get the goals. Me being in about that dressing room with that group of players, knew they would score that amount of goals that was needed. Did we think Hearts would lose? Deep down, probably not.
Exactly 40 years on. At Love Street and Dens.
Back here at Love Street, the scenes are absolutely incredible.
This is Albert Kidd, the heartbreak season on Clyde One's Super Scoreboard.
When the whistle blew for kickoff on the 3rd of May, 1986, it was the start of one of the most electrifying games of football that Celtic had ever played. Celtic knew they had to win by at least 3 goals to be in with a chance of the title, and it didn't take them long. 6 minutes into the game, Owen Archdeacon had the ball and fired it into the St Mirren penalty area.
Brian McClare, after 5 minutes of play, a corner kick hit into the middle by Owen Archdeacon. Brian McClare rose up high above the St Mirren defence and headed the ball into the back of the net. So St Mirren 0, Celtic 1, and Celtic right from the very start taking their championship chance. Povic Stay passes it wide to Maurice Johnston inside the box. Maurice Johnston shoots and it's in! Took a couple of bounces to get there, but it made it into the back of the net. St Mirren 0, Celtic 2, Maurice Johnston. Now a chance for Celtic, a beautiful move down the right touchline. McClare into the middle, Maurice Johnston, a wonder goal for Celtic. Oh, Celtic swept the length of the field there, and Maurice Johnston was on the end of the move for the second time in 3 minutes. St Mirren 0, Celtic 3, 2 for Mo. Forward down the left touchline, Owen Archdeacon bursts inside the box, still Archdeacon, he cuts it back for Murdo McLeod, who leaves it for McStay, who shoots. Celtic's fourth goal of the afternoon. Well, Johnston tries to get on the end of a pass for McStay. He does, turns it inside to McLeod, a shot, and there's another goal for Celtic, scored by Brian McClare, as Murdo McLeod passed inside to him very unselfishly. Brian McClare just buries that from the edge of the 6-yard box. St Mirren 0, Celtic 5, and that looked oh so easy.
Well, it was so easy, but that really was an unselfish bit of play by Mo Johnston. He let the ball go. St Mirren didn't know where they were. Look at them now, stricken, head shaking, heads down. But that was a marvellous bit of unselfish, intelligent play by Celtic, and so well finished off. This is not a football team Celtic have sent out here today in this momentous afternoon. It is a demolition squad. And all we can see at Love Street, cacophony of din, a sea of green and white scarves, and one of the most momentous afternoons in Celtic's history. They really have done everything David Hay wanted of them, Richard. He said they could score 3 goals and more. He's been absolutely right.
Whatever happened to Mo?
I don't know. There was no controversy following him.
Peter Grant.
But listen, the one thing I can say, what a wonderful player.
I remember Murdo telling me that he was at a function and at the mention of Mo's name, the crowd started to boo. And he said, I can't have that. But for Mo Johnson's goals, we wouldn't have won the league.
Oh, he was an unbelievable finisher. People talk about his personality, the way he looked and his white Porsche at the time and all that sort of thing. But by God, he worked hard in training. Him and Brian McClare were unbelievable. I think part of the 6 years when he went to Rangers, that was the biggest blow that happened to us more than anything else, because if he'd have came to Celtic at that particular time, they wouldn't have went 6 years. There's no doubt in my mind. That's how highly I regarded him as a player. He was unbelievable. But there was a sort of quietness for the Celtic support, which is unusual. There was a big green bit behind at Love Street, and I'm on there stretching and whatever, hoping you get an opportunity going. But I was actually like a supporter that day, watching how well the boys had played. They were absolutely brilliant. Everything the team done, the goals they scored, everything about them, the way they played, the way they went about their business, and the respect they showed St Mirren, they were outstanding. And as I say, the goal scorers, as mentioned, Brian, Mo, Paul, Murdo having a hand, TB, all these guys, they were all capable of being creative and scoring goals.
Here's Kenny Black.
Wee Doddy was sitting in, obviously, in the technical area, and he was mindfully telling us that don't go in there at half-time and mention anything about the Celtic result, because we were very much aware from sitting on the bench. Our scenario was to avoid defeat. But you still think when you get that close, you know, you get to 82 minutes, 80, whatever it was, and you're still in the ball game, very much in the ball game. I don't think it was a particularly good game, but Probably a lot of nerves involved as well, understandably so.
Right, let's then go and find out how Hart and Midlothian are doing against Dundee at Dens Park with Jim Craig.
Well, they're not doing particularly well, Richard, and the fans behind me here are just pushing them on rather hopefully just now. Play is very, very scrappy indeed. Dundee looking a little more confident when they come forward now. Certainly Hart still have got most of the play. There really has been no goal-mouth incidents, and at this stage it's anybody's game.
As the game wore on, were you convinced that Dundee would score?
No, I wasn't really convinced. They looked okay. They kept their defensive line at the back quite well, and they had control of midfield, but they were not threatening up front, and I really didn't think that they were in a position to score too many goals.
Ultimately, Jim, the modern day expression is, did Hart's bottle crash?
No, they rose to the challenge in actual fact. You know, they were always a good team, Hugh. They were difficult to beat at home, and even when they were away, they were a hard side to play against because they were well organised.
Jim Duffy.
You could sense it, that real tension, the atmosphere, the anxiety, in the fans. And then Hearts, as you would expect, the longer the second half went on, get a little bit more deeper and a little bit more like protecting what they had, because 0-0 obviously wins them the game. And I do remember John Cahoon going through because he skipped past me and went round Rab Geddes, our goalkeeper. And I'm looking back as he's went past me, he's running towards the goalkeeper, and I'm thinking, well, this is them going to win the league here. And as he went past the goalkeeper, big Jimmy Smith, who had, you know, those telescopic legs, was chasing back and get back with an unbelievable tackle to block the ball as John Cahoon was going to roll into an empty net.
Hearts supporters, fans, nerves are certainly in stretches now, Richard. They've had two good chances in the second half just since you were last here. John Cahoon, he went right through the middle. He beat Jim Duffy. He pulled the ball past Bobby Geddes, but was crowded out by the rest of the Dundee defence. And then the same man went right through the middle, and he had John Robertson on his left. He should have passed, but he decided to go right and was crowded out again. Those really Hearts only two chances of the second half. Apart from that, Dundee have looked fairly impressive coming forward as well.
I can remember that moment quite vividly, thinking that was probably the chance that they had. And after that went, Hearts never really had another chance. And Albert, come on, we're about half an hour to go. Albert Kidd, come on, we're about half an hour to go, and cemented his name in kind of history, really.
And there's no goal scored, obviously, at the ends at this particular time. So there's still a nervousness. It was bizarre, being five up, we sang the goals and then went quiet. And then I'm not long on, actually, then the noise comes.
Drops it, fumbles it, catches it at the second attempt. Dundee have scored, and Celtic can't believe it, but yes, the news sweeps around the ground. Dundee have scored. Jim Craig.
Yes, Richard, a corner from the far side by Robert Connor, in swinging corner, was not cleared by the Hearts defence, and I think eventually it was Albert Kidd who seemed to hook it into the roof of the net. So we have now only 7 minutes left for play here. It's Dundee 1, Hearts 0.
7 or 8 minutes to go in this game here. There's 4 minutes left here, and all of a sudden it appears that Celtic are going to do it. All of a sudden this match, which has been in limbo, swings Celtic's way dramatically. If you're a Celtic supporter and you're near Love Street, why aren't you here?
Goosebumps.
Yeah.
Oh, still now you can, the hairs in the back of my neck are stand up, down my arms, everything. It was quite incredible. And the great Jim Craig, obviously, brilliant memories, something I'll take me to the grave for sure.
You and Tosh McKinley, very pally. Tosh played for Dundee that day and came off the park to let somebody on. I don't think you've let him forget it for 40 years.
No, I say that's the best thing ever done for Celtic, was him getting taken off and Albert coming on that particular day.
Here's Albert Kidd.
Over here in Adelaide, just last week, John Brown come across there and I got in touch with him for a couple of days and had a good laugh. And he was the one that knocked it down to me, you know. And I says to him, are you still living off my goal that I scored against Hearts? He said, oh, that'll be right. It was a great header down from me. I said, yeah, but we're all square on that bomber, you know. But it was an important time of the game and an important goal, obviously. But again, the emphasis was on us getting to Europe. We never had a clue what was going on at the game with Rangers and Motherwell. And the ones that lost out were clearly Hearts, like, you know, they were devastated.
They knew that as soon as that goal went in, their chances of taking the title were gone. You're not going to pull two goals back. There was just a sudden quietness around the whole place.
You were on the park by that time, Kenny. You'd been subbed on. How did you feel when Albert Kidd scored that goal?
Heartbreaking, really, you know. because the way that season went, well, they hadn't been beaten for a hell of a long time, so you still think you're going to get something out of the game. All leading up to the game, there was that issue where we had an illness that had spread through the camp. That was one of the main reasons why I didn't start. Craig Levein wasn't able to even attend the game. He was ill. So there was a sickness bug or an illness that went right through. And Brian Whittaker, God rest his soul, Alec McDonald thought it best that Brian start the game and come off at half-time, and then I would play for the second half. But as I say, you still had that hope. You still got to keep believing.
Celtic could have won 10-0 that day if Hearts would have got the point. Yeah. Hearts would have won the league. Understandably, they started to protect what they had because they didn't want to take any risks. Unfortunately for Hearts, that moment from Albert was pivotal, because then at 1-0, they then had to then chase the game.
And then came another moment. Yeah.
Suddenly masses of photographers have appeared from goodness only knows where.
A second goal for Dundee, Richard. A great run by Albert Kidd down the right wing. A ball inside and a return pass. A 1-2, and he slammed the ball past Henry Smith and has goal. Hearts fans behind us throwing their scarves down onto the trackside. But a great break for Dundee. A wonderful run by Albert Kidd to more or less seal Hearts' hopes of the championship.
You know, when I come on and I scored the first goal, I just thought that they fell apart. The second goal was testimony to that, because I skipped past a couple of players, as you see on the footage. And then once the second goal went in, it's a big chore to come back in that short time that was left in the game.
I think Roddy McDonald ended up playing centre-half that day, and there was no preparation for him to be involved in the game whatsoever. Well, we're just so focused on getting the result that we needed. I think defeat never really entered the equation. Not to be able to put our strongest side out that day certainly had a major effect on it.
The realisation hit everybody, you know, the Hearts weren't going to win the league. When I reflect back now, all these many years later, I mean, it's a huge emotional distress for everyone connected with Hearts. But at the time, I just remember thinking, wow, that was some goal.
Yeah.
That was a brilliant goal. You know, I don't think anybody really talks about the goal because of, you know, what was at stake and what happened on that particular day in terms of the league title. I think people tend to forget how good a goal it actually was. He picked it up about the halfway line. He skipped past someone. He ran in. I think he played a little 1-2 with Graham Harvey. He got it back. And it was just a really good footballing goal, you know, and a terrific individual goal from Albert.
At first, if you remember, it came in that Kidd had scored. So everybody's like, ah, Albert, Walter, whatever. Don't know. We're only one we can remember is Walter Kidd. So we think Walter Kidd scored for Hearts. This is on the pitch at this time, by the way. And then comes through, the fans are jumping up. And I'm looking over at the bench to see, and Davy Provins got two fingers up, his fist clenched, 2-0. And I'm thinking, oh, no, this can't be true, you know. That I'm going to obviously have an opportunity to win my first championship medal.
Here at Love Street, the scenes are absolutely incredible. The Celtic supporters are on their feet. Celtic are about to become Scottish champions. Nobody had mentioned them in recent times, and yet all of a sudden, with that second goal being scored there by Albert Kidd, there can be no doubt about that. Well, the seconds tick away. What about this, James?
This is absolutely astonishing. Celtic are the champions without a doubt, and the banners are waving, the stand is literally shivering. The team which came from behind, the team which seemed to have lost everything, they are shouting, "We are the champions." Mo Johnston and company are absolutely ecstatic with delight. They know that against all the odds, they are the champions. Celtic really have made history.
It's full time here anyhow, and the crowd are on the field of play. This is going to be absolute bedlam here. I'm going to try and get down trackside in a moment or two. And it's full time at Den. Celtic are the league champions for 85-86 as the whistle goes. The Celtic supporters here in the stand are absolutely on their feet.
There are hundreds invading this pitch. The Celtic players, some of them having been bundled around in joy. Unbelievable sights at Love Street. One of the greatest ever finishes in British, not Scottish, football.
The most dramatic end to a season.
Celtic are the league champions, 85-86.
This is Albert Kidd, the heartbreak season on Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
The league was decided. I'm standing where Love Street's terraces once stood. It was here that Celtic cheers rang out as the players celebrated in front of thousands of their fans. Richard Park had managed to make his way into the Celtic dressing room, which would probably have been in someone's living room right behind me.
Yeah, having travelled around with a lot of those players and a lot of that management, I knew what the feeling was going to be behind the scenes as well. It was unconfined joy, very obviously, on the terraces. But it wasn't clear to the board of directors and one or two of the players what the result was. And so I put down the microphone right at the end of the game. When the Celtic board came up the stairs, I was coming down the stairs, and I told, I remember, Christopher White, Jack McGinn, and the other directors, Jimmy Farrell there. I said, you guys have just won the league. Dundee beat Hearts. You've won. Oh, my God. I mean, they were dumbfounded.
Right, let's go down to the dressing room. The Celtic players themselves do not realise that they have won. Davy Hay is just 5 yards in front of me. Congratulations, you've done it!
Dundee definitely beat Hearts.
2-0! Yes, Hearts have been defeated by 2-0. That is confirmed, full time.
It's a miracle and proud to be part of it today. The play in the past 6-8 weeks has been exceptional. I thought the first half today was brilliant, especially that third goal. When we've been written off, they've come back, and this has happened this season.
Do you remember when I told you on Wednesday night about what happened in West Germany?
That's true. And someday I got a phone call from a chap in Germany on Monday explaining the whole thing. Like, I felt we could win today and get the goals, and felt that Dundee going for Europe could probably still beat Hearts. I was maybe hoping for it, but it has happened and I'm delighted. Must say for the experienced players as well, people like Danny McGrain especially, you know, you couldn't get a better Celtic player than Danny McGrain.
David Hay, on behalf of everybody listening, congratulations. You came and you did it.
And I met the players. I can still remember Danny McCrean, Pat Bonner, the guys soaking in everything. And then at the corner of my eye, I saw David Hay coming down the tunnel. And, you know, David Hay was a favourite player of mine, I've got to be honest with you. And also, I thought, a very good manager. And this, for him, was an absolute triumph. It was just so memorable.
Roy, what's the problem? Why can't you go out just now?
Well, I'll try to get the supporters off the park, get them onto the terrace, and then we'll do a lap order.
Are we going to get a chorus from you all here?
It's a grand old team to sing.
Who's going to? Pat Bonner will lead.
This man's getting, Willie McStay's getting married in 2 weeks, a wedding present for him.
No. Oh, I'm just delighted. It's just one of my dreams. A league medal. I'm just delighted.
This is what you came back to Glasgow for, though, isn't it?
That's right. Well, I've got a Scottish Cup. Now I've got a league medal, so I'm just delighted. I'm over the moon. Thanks very much, Richard.
You got access that we can only dream of today. If we attempted to do what you did and get into the Celtic dressing room, someone would have been arrested.
There's no question about that. The times, they have changed dramatically. But I think you get carried away on the wave of emotion that you can hear around you. And everything seems possible. Nothing, you know, as a broadcaster is going to stop you. It is the story that counts. It is always the story that counts on Super Scoreboard.
Here's Peter Grant.
To be on the pitch when Celtic won a title was a dream come true for a young Celtic supporter who was playing along with his heroes.
Listen to yourself, 40 years ago, you were claiming credit for the win.
Now, what I want to know is, maybe Peter Grant can come in and tell us, Peter, has there been champagne ordered?
Oh, yes, definitely. I think the turning point, Richard, was when I came on, you know.
But the boys are saying that, you know,
because with 5 minutes to go, you know, and it was 5-0, was it? And then I made, and you're Dundee, not each at Dundee, you know, and I don't tell the boys, you know, and that was the difference. That's how we won the league. But it's a great day for the boys, and the punters out there were absolutely brilliant. They stood by us when we were going through the bad time, but now they're absolutely brilliant.
I don't even know that's me.
Yeah, that's you, all right.
I think it's the first time, actually, that I've heard the commentary, you know, in 40 years, because I'm not a great one for looking back. You're so proud to have been part of that group and that particular team.
How was it when you get back to Celtic Park? It must have been very emotional. I mean, the late, great Tommy was a man who wore his emotions on his sleeve. Others were not like that. What was it like at Celtic Park?
But I think you'd be surprised. Because like saying Murdo and David Proven celebrated as if it was their first title. They were so pleased to win a trophy. And that was the thing that always stuck with me, that every time you pull on a Celtic jersey, you're expected to win. And when you do win, enjoy it. I've been there through difficult times when you don't win things, and that's why I say you never ever get sick of it. Mm. You know, you never ever get sick of winning a title or winning a Scottish Cup, whatever. And that was the thing that lived with me. But they just didn't win on match day. They won in training. I've never seen, been in training grounds when they've not been successful, but been so competitive on a training pitch. And the team never wavered at any time. And I think that was down to the players that was on the pitch. They all knew we could do a job for the team when we were ever called upon, even although we're young. But that was down to the group, but also the belief of the manager that he gave you when he selected you and brought you into the group, that you felt you could do the job.
From that day, the great Tommy Burns.
I'm just really happy for the supporters out there the other day, the people that support us all year round but kind of get to the games. Most of all for the manager, because he's took some stick in the last couple of years, and if ever a guy deserved to win a championship, it was David Hay, and I'm just absolutely delighted to be part of it and part of a great Celtic win again. It's just a brilliant, brilliant day for us. You know, maybe this will be just the boost that the club needs. But in closing, I'd just like to thank God for answering all my prayers, and obviously the prayers of the Celtic supporters, and I just hope we all have a good night.
Tommy Burns in a nutshell.
Yeah, sadly missed every day. Speak to him every day, Hugh. Yeah, I've never forgotten, never will, because him and Danny, for day one, I went into Celtic Park as a 15-year-old kid, both of them didn't under the wing. I used to follow him about like a lap dog in that respect, because I wondered where they used to go, and they'd put a coat on, and they'd disappear up into the old Celtic main stand, as you know, and it was frozen cold up there. Danny'd be doing sits against the wall, and Tommy'd be doing sit-ups on concrete with coats on. And that's when I knew the difference. That's why they lasted Celtic as long as it did. That's why they were the players they were, and that's why they were the people they were. And I said, well, it's not just what you do on the training pitch. It's not just what you do on the pitch on a Saturday. It's how you live your life. You were representing Celtic 24-7. So you still realise that to this day, because that's a great name you're carrying and the badge. But that was down to the guys showing us their ropes. I was blessed to know and been very close to Tommy. I thank him every day. Keep the phone, the number in my phone. And thankfully, I can still call some a very close friend who I speak to and say my prayers to now. To such a remarkable man. Him and Rosemary were unbelievable people to me as a youngster.
Kenny Black.
Well, I don't think you ever cope with it. And I can remember the dressing room after the game when we came in. Sonny Jardine tried to say a few words. But what can you say? Because bearing in mind also, we had the cup final the week after. So that was a major thing that we needed to get back in training on Monday morning. But that dressing room was, it was just sheer silence. Nobody could really speak and could believe it, really. When you get to the last game of the season and you get to the last 8 minutes of the season and you're still in the driving seat, it's a hard one to take.
Here's Jim Duffy.
When the final whistle went, even after that, you know, the only thing I said was, what was your score at Ibrox? I wasn't thinking about the Heart situation then. I was just thinking about us. And then people told us that Rangers had won and therefore we went out. So the whole thing became flat then, because we didn't get what we were looking for, which is to qualify for Europe. Hearts had the title ripped away from them in the dying seconds. I mean, you think how close it was. 7 minutes.
Yeah.
7 minutes from winning a title. It's incredible to get that close and feel that heartbreak.
As you can imagine, in Paisley, it was pandemonium. And then Paul Cooney handed back to Jim Craig at Dens.
Let's go up to Dens Park in full time. And what an afternoon for poor old Hearts. Jim Craig.
Yes, what an afternoon indeed, Paul. The Hearts fans have cheered their team off the park. A tribute to them, because they have had a wonderful season in spite of the fact they haven't won the league. But a bitterly disappointed Hearts. The truth is, Paul, when the big occasion came, they froze.
Well, they did freeze on the day, Hugh. That made all the difference. One team rose to the occasion and one team didn't. I found it quite difficult to cope with it all, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
I was pretty nervous the whole way through.
You were an Old Firm adversary of Alec McDonald and Sandy Jardine, who were the Hearts managerial team. And
I spoke to the two of them afterwards. And,
yeah.
You know, I commiserated, because, I mean, it was a terrible position to be put in. No matter what team you support, to go there with chances of winning a title and then for it all to fall apart at the last moment must have been devastating. I mean, they were not happy at all about the way things had gone.
Albert Kidd.
After the game, we were in the players' lounge and they were just devastated and defeated to John Robertson, Davy McPherson, you know, John Cahoon. They were just out on their feet there and never had anything to say. And Sandy Jardine and Wee Dorey as well, they were very, very flat. The worst thing I've ever seen in a players' lounge, getting beat from a team in a very special day in a very special league. I just felt sorry for Hearts at the end of the game, because we never achieved anything either, you know.
Would you say that those two goals changed your life in some way? Because the world over, you're known as Albert Kidd, the guy who scored the two goals that won the league for Celtic.
You know, to be honest with you, the amount of people that I've met globally is quite incredible. A simple thing like Jamie Oliver restaurants. There was a guy there who was a Celtic supporter. When he got my name, he was saying, "You've got to be joking. You know, you're Albert Kennedy." Yeah? And I says, "Yeah." And there's been a lot of that stuff. Like, and it was very flattering as well. And every year, it's mentioned. Our family over here now, we've got a big family, we've got 14 grandchildren and stuff like that. They, you know, they were saying, "Grandad, there's that thing that come on again." And then I've got to educate them on that. Well, you know, that in Scotland, when that comes on, the people remember the goals and how important it was, you know. So, yeah.
Tell us about Billy Connolly.
Yeah, Billy Connolly, I'm in Adelaide. I was in a business meeting going into the Hyatt and I seen him. I went, "How are you doing, Billy?" And from a distance, probably 5 yards or so, he says, "Oh, you're a Scots fan." I says, "Yeah." He started speaking to me. He says, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I used to be a football player and professional." And he says, "What team do you support in Scotland?" I said, "Well, I'm the same as you. I'm a Celtic supporter." I says, "I scored the two goals that won Celtic the league." And honest, he says, "You're no Albert Kidd, are you? Are you serious? Are you Albert Kidd?" I says, "Yeah." And he grabbed me. And he was jumping about and whatnot. He says, "Look, I've got a show tonight. I'd love you to come backstage and whatever." So I did do that. And I had one of my sons there as well. And just to bring him into that arena was really, really good, you know. And I kept in touch with him as well. He nearly come to one of my daughter's weddings because we were playing in Sydney. I made a phone call to him and said, "Look, I wouldn't mind inviting you to the wedding, you know." But I'm glad he never come because it would have been a great pleasure and my daughter getting married. It would have been all around Billy Connolly. But yeah, that was really good.
At the start of the following season, Dundee played Celtic at Celtic Park in the first game. And I remember you coming out of the tunnel just to look at the pitch and you got a standing ovation from the Celtic fans.
You're right. The first game was against Celtic and went out for the warm-up. And Eric Ferguson, that you probably know, the physio at Dundee, he actually knocked a ball away over to the Celtic side. He says, go and get that ball there. So I went and I picked up the ball and I was coming back and the whole stand stood up because I was the last one off the park. And it was very flattering indeed. And my father was in the stand as well. So he was sort of chuffed. And that was a big moment for me because I love Celtic and I was very, very pleased for that to happen.
I think Albert was, I can't say flavour of the month, he's been flavour of the month for 40 years since then. You know, Celtic supporters clubs get named after him. He gets invited to a variety of Celtic functions almost every anniversary, I think, since then. And then he became the focal point of the media, of course. Everyone wanted an interview with him and all these type of things. So from a guy that came on in the last half hour of the game, he wrote his name in folklore in Scottish football.
I was up at a Celtic supporters function in Dundee and Albert was there and he obviously has been living over in Australia. I think he's been living off that money he can make off all the Celtic supporters clubs. But I didn't realise it was Albert at first when he walked in. He's like Don Johnson out of Miami Vice. The hair's all off, he had the white jacket and all that, but he was looking $1 million. It's one of the names that every time I hear it, I just have a wry smile, you know what I mean? I don't think he gets the credit for the goals he scored on the particular day. I know he gets obviously talk about Hearts losing and Celtic winning it, but the goals he scored were wonderful goals. I'm sure he was disappointed not to be starting the game as anybody is, but to come on and have such a big say and be remembered, as you say, Albert says, remembered as much as any other. You'd probably ask who's the goal scorers for us and people would forget, but they would remember who Dundee goal scorer was, which is quite ironic. Quite rightly so, he goes down in Celtic history.
40 years later, how do you reflect on it?
A massive opportunity missed and a massive opportunity to have a league winners medal. I mean, I started off at Rangers and it was a fantastic apprenticeship for me with John Gregg and Sandy Jardine and Alec Miller, Tom Forsyth, Colin Jackson, Peter McCloy, Derek Johnson, David Cooper, Bobby Russell. I can remember them all when I went there. And to come away from there and then be at Hearts for 5 years and come within a whisker of winning the league, it leaves a massive hole in your football career, really. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy.
Professionally, was that the best day of your life?
It's settled up there. Purely because, yeah, I'd sort of sway towards Celtic and I've got a lot of friends at Celtic and there's people like Bobby Lennox and Jimmy Johnston and all these people that I was friendly with. You know, it's really, really good because I just think to myself, I watch YouTube a couple of times and then I go back and watch the game again. And even the players like Bobby Glennie and Cammy Fraser and all these people, Ray Stevens, you know, all good players in their own right. They mention it every time. You know, I was going back to Scotland every year and there was a lot of question and answer stuff going on. And I always come to that game against Hearts because it was a massive game. It really was for both teams. It's quite unbelievable, isn't it? And it's still mentioned in these days. Looking at the crowd, I remember watching on YouTube the crowd going back to St Mirren. It really touched me a bit, you know, because they all started clapping and they thought it was for Walter Kidd. And then all of a sudden they got the right name and it was quite flattering as well. Just thousands upon thousands of Celtic supporters really ecstatic about winning the league. And I was, thankfully, a great part of that.
I'd love to say it was great reminiscing, but I'm telling you, it was just one of these situations that happened, and I'm sure I'm speaking for all the lads in that dressing room that day, management and supporters. It'll take a hell of a lot to get over the line this season. It would be fantastic for everyone. It would just be a little bit of a payback to what we could have achieved.
And so concluded one of the most dramatic endings to a season in Scottish football history. Who better to sum it all up than the late, legendary Jimmy Sanderson?
Well, I've seen some days in my 40 years, but I've really enjoyed this afternoon, and Celtic deserved that. That really was something that no one could possibly foresee, except, I think, Davy Hay, who told you on Wednesday night, with myself standing beside you, that they could do it. Quite frankly, I didn't believe it. You told me you did believe it. I give you that. I must hand you that. And Davy Hay was the man who came out and said so. He's just left here, puffing in his cigar. I think the most contented man in British football.
Can I ask you one personal question? You interviewed me at Hampden. Somebody told me that you had listened back to the interview and said to Paul Cooney, that guy's got a weird voice. My 40 years on Radio Clyde have apparently been based on the fact that that guy's got a weird voice.
Very probably very true, Hugh, but I would never confirm or deny anything done in my name of the management side of my what laughingly passes for a career, you know.
Exactly 40 years on. At Love Street and Dens.
Back here at Love Street, the scenes are absolutely incredible.
This is Albert Kidd, the heartbreak season on Clyde One Super Scoreboard.